What's going on, everybody? This is Nico, and you are listening to yet another edition of your favorite podcast in the whole wide world. This is the Nico Show for Thursday, May 11th, 2017. How you guys doing? How are you? Thank you for joining me. I have a story. And boy, are you going to be shocked and amazed by the level of coincidence that went into making this story possible. The stars just aligned and shone down upon me this week, guys. As a matter of fact, this just happened yesterday. And I want to get right into it. If you listened to last week's show, you will share in my amazement, I am sure. If you have not listened to last week's show, please go back and do so, or at least listen to the first 15 minutes, because I went on a rant, the likes of which you've seen quite a bit, actually. I was going to say you've never seen before, but no, you see it about every week on this show. It's the same deal. I get in a room by myself, I shout into a microphone, a couple people listen, none of them really enjoy it all that much. But I went on a rant about vanity license plates and how everybody that has them should not necessarily be exterminated, but at least be given substantial jail time, you know, and without the chance of parole. It should be a minimum jail sentence of, let's say, 10 years. 10 years, no parole. We keep you out of society and all of your vanity license plates go with you. All right, it's a bad, bad, bad crime. And it is harming my eyes every time I get on the freeway on my way to work. Like the hardworking, upstanding American citizen that I am. You're not going to believe the coincidence that happened, because this rant was triggered by a guy with a license plate that read VRRR OOM, Vroom. I called him Vin Diesel. I made fun of the fact that he likes to drive fast. It was really a license plate that plagued my internal monologue for a good 6 to 7 days. I was just tossing and turning in bed at night, thinking about this asshole and the thought process that went into a vanity license plate like that. It's a great mystery that I was unable to crack on my own. And all I wanted to do was know more about this man. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I am astounded to say that that man and I met again this week. I am not kidding you. I was driving home from work around the same time as my average afternoon commute. It was within probably a mile of where I ran into him the last time, but the exact same vehicle with the exact same license plate, driven by what I assume, or who I assume, is the exact same man, crossed paths with me on my drive home. Let me just say this, okay? Because at first I did a bit of a double take, you know? I was drinking a hot coffee in like the saloon of an old Western town. It was just a cliche like spit take, you know? It was like in a cartoon or something, you know? Jerry the Mouse is spitting at Tom the Cat, you know, getting him burned, giving him third degree burns on the face with some hot coffee. It was a real cliche, the spit take that I did as I was driving home. But I quickly collected myself, and I took out my phone, and at about 80 miles an hour on Interstate 84 in good old Connecticut, I started snapping pictures as though I was examining a crime scene. And I wanted to understand everything I could, because it is one thing to run into a creature like this once in your life, but to get a second chance at examining the animal, that's like being able to go into into a space shuttle twice. That's like Neil Armstrong after his first trip to the moon saying, "You know what, Neil? We're going to send you up again." to start examining some space rocks. You don't get that chance, you know? Normally, that is scientific access that you're only given for a short period of time. So I did not want to spoil this second opportunity. And I took a picture. The dude was driving a Tesla, a black Tesla. You know, last time, I don't even recall. I mean, it clicked to me once I saw the vehicle, but I did not make note of the fact that he was driving a Tesla last time. Not the coolest cars. And I'm not a car guy. I drive an 04 Honda Accord. It's beige, right? But it's good on gas. Apparently the mileage lasts forever. And there's a pretty spacious leg room. You know, that's my ride. One of the rims fell off about a year ago. It's a Honda Accord with three hubcaps. And a couple dents and scratches along the way. So I am not one to criticize another man's choice in vehicle. But I will say this. If you're going to put the sound of a fast car on your license plate, you better be able to back it up with the vehicle you're driving. That's all I'm saying. You may want to be driving a car that can actually make the sound of vroom. And all I'm saying is, like, an eco-friendly Tesla that I don't know if it's chargeable. I don't know if it's an electric car or not, but it's certainly fuel efficient and is certainly very conscious of the environment that it's driving in, is not necessarily the car for that. But regardless, I had to learn more. I had to learn more about this mystery man. Kind of like George Costanza in the episode of Seinfeld when a beautiful woman at Monk's Diner confused him for her boyfriend. And so George, thinking to himself, I look like the guy, right? The guy's name was Neil. You know, I have some facial features and physical features in common with this gorgeous woman's boyfriend. What does he have that I lack? So the whole course of the episode was him becoming more and more obsessed with this mystery man and eventually falling in love. I had a similar compulsion to learn something about this vroom guy. So I got over into the middle lane. We were both in the fast lane and I sped to about 90 miles an hour. Because he was going fairly fast in his Tesla, and I had to catch up because I had to get a good look at the guy behind the wheel. So I almost cut off some people that were driving next to me. I desperately got up right next to him, turned my head, taking my eyes off of the road, and putting myself in grave danger along with my fellow drivers on Interstate 84. And I was baffled because I don't know about you, but I had a pretty clear image in my head of what this guy was supposed to look like. And there were a few sort of key things. I expected this guy to be like a hardcore gym goer. And I'm sure there are people that with eclectic looks and diverse body types. And, I'm sure there are hardcore gym goers that represent all colors of the spectrum. You know, there are scrawny guys, there are bigger guys, you know, shorter, taller, male, female. I'm sure that the gym is an eclectic place, and I would probably discover that if I decided to go there sometime. But there's certainly a cliche for guys like that, and I expected the guy with the license plate vroom to have that look. You know, sort of a short haircut, maybe greased back a little bit, built, but like too built. Like not I want to live a healthy lifestyle built, but I want to flex in front of the hot babe on the elliptical machine built, you know? Dude probably is wearing sunglasses, especially if he's driving at about 5 o'clock at night. The sun can sort of get in your eyes. So not necessarily that it's a functional pair of shades, but, you know, I'm trying to cover up my eyes so you can't get a look into my soul pair of shades. So I was expecting that, dude. You know the one. A douchey frat guy, essentially, that wanted to swing his big dick around and let you know that he can drive his Tesla like the baddest MF-er that's ever walked the face of the planet. So imagine my horror when I drove up to the shoulder of this guy and saw a 50-year-old businessman with a face that I can only describe as Huckleberry Hound looking. It was droopy as fuck, people. He had it. I don't know. Is it Huckleberry Hound? Is that the right cartoon dog I'm thinking of? There might have been a dog named Droopy, too, that was like that hung out with Tom and Jerry every once in a while. It was certainly an MGM property. You know, it was one of those dogs. But regardless, this guy looked like that character. A very droopy face, sort of like the dude that that said inconceivable in The Princess Bride, you know, very Rick Moranis looking, just sort of had that whole vibe about him. He was clearly in his 50s, kind of going bald, wearing a suit and tie, so he's clearly coming from his 9-to-5 desk job. He probably makes a good salary, probably has a wife and 2.5 kids, lives in the suburbs of Connecticut. So just a boring dude. Not the type of guy that you'd expect to have a Vroom license plate. Certainly the type of guy that should be driving a Tesla. No doubt about it. Like, he fits the bill of goods on that. Not exactly giving off Vin Diesel vibes, though. And so, my understanding of the vanity license plate took on a whole new meaning. And I think I am more enlightened than I was a week ago on this matter. Because what I assumed was a fairly straightforward sort of ego trip, you know, an egomaniacal show of force and masculinity, was actually something entirely different. This man put that vanity license plate on because he was trying to be cool. It was like the Steve Buscemi backwards hat holding the skateboard, hello fellow kids type thing. You know, it was the I'm an old guy that doesn't know how to hang with the young people. So let me check out those vanity license plates. I hear that's what all the kids are into these days. You know? It's classic, like, Hillary Clinton Pokemon go to the polls. You know what I mean? It's like that type of move. It is the old guy trying to stay young and invigorated. And trying to make sure that his niche that he carved out on the mean highways of Connecticut several decades ago is still his. And that's what's so sad about it. This is not a guy that has delusions about his own dominance. This is a guy that just doesn't know how to be cool anymore. So I think that this same sort of fear on the part of old people, apologies to the older crowd, and not to imply that someone in their 50s is necessarily an old person. But I think that there's a lot of that going on with men of a certain age, you know, that feel like they have to hold on to their personality or their youth or just that sense of what makes them interesting by attempting these displays of vanity that are so out of touch. I have a theory that there's more old people with vanity license plates than people in their 20s. The average age for a vanity license plate user is probably, what, 45? Can't be younger than 40. So all this is to say, we need education in this realm. We need to educate the populace on the fact that this not only isn't cool in 2017, this was never cool. It was never cool to put your name on the back of your car, to put a badass word that implied speed and edginess and unlawfulness. You know? Printing Rebel 69 on your plate is not cool at all. You're just gonna look like Steve Buscemi. You're just gonna look like Hillary Clinton making corny jokes about trendy iPhone games. That's not the way, AARP holders. That's not the way to stay cool. Age with grace. Become mature. Be fascinating. Be interesting. Be mysterious. Don't put sound effects on your damn license plate. Okay? Show these kids how you used to do it in the old days. Don't try doing what they're doing. Because Lord knows we're really hard to figure out. Anyway, that's my life lesson from this week. I know, crazy stories, right? Man, do we have plenty more, though, to get to on today's program. I may have another rant coming up a little bit later on. I can't wait to get to that. We're going to be talking about some television and popular culture, specifically the return of American Idol. This news was announced this week, and we're going to get to that in just a little bit. But first, folks, your favorite segment is about to make a return. And for a piece of news that has shocked the nation. Yeah, that's right. You know what time it is. Here's the music. The Trump campaign, we're back, and ladies and gentlemen, there's so much to get to as we update you on each and every step of Donald Trump's historic presidency. Folks, we're gonna just start with the top story at this hour. Shockwaves sent down the spines of journalists all across this great land. A bombshell story made the rounds over the past 24 hours, and I am here, of course, to cover it and give my patented Nico thoughts. We are, of course, talking about a new challenger to Donald Trump in the year 2020. Now, I know it's early. Campaign season is still about a year and a half away. We're in the real early stages. I mean, we just got done with an election. It is way too soon to start thinking and talking about the next one. It's just a time of a lot of rumors. Exploratory committees are just starting to be formed. There's a lot that still needs to transpire. And there are many players that will eventually enter the ring that we were not even aware we're going to be in the mix. But the whispers have begun whispering. The rumor mill is churning at hydraulic speeds. And this morning, I'm recording this on Wednesday evening, but this morning, a fun little political tidbit was dropped in the comedy issue of GQ magazine, the paper of record. Get ready, guys, for the latest political challenger, the first guy that has expressed any interest in running for the Democratic nomination in the year 2020. I am, of course, talking about the savior of the Fast and Furious franchise, beater of many Cherokee drums, the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, folks, Dwayne The Rock Johnson is considering a presidential run. I'm reading this article. Again, this is the comedy issue of GQ magazine. It's called Dwayne Johnson for President? Exclamation point. Here's what the article reads. Last June, when the Washington Post published an op-ed suggesting he, meaning The Rock, could be a viable candidate, Johnson posted a screen grab and gave the idea a boost. On Instagram, he called the post piece interesting and fun to read, adding the most important thing right now is strong, honest leadership from our current and future leaders of this country. That is a direct quote. Since then, Johnson tells me he's given the question more thought. Quote, a year ago, it started coming up more and more. There was a real sense of earnestness, which made me go home and think, let me really rethink my answer and make sure I am giving an answer that is truthful and also respectful. I don't want to be flippant. We'll have 3 days off for a weekend. No taxes. Suggesting that those would be part of his presidential platform. So after that consideration, Johnson doesn't hesitate when I ask him whether he honestly might one day give up his life as the highest paid movie star on earth, which is unquestionably easier, more fun, and more lucrative than being president of the United States, in order to run for office. Quote, I think that it's a real possibility, he says solemnly. This is one of my favorite excerpts from any piece of journalism I've read in a long time. Here's why. The writer of this particular article, Katie Weaver, is not only a brilliant wordsmith, whatever the politically correct term is. She's not only good with words, but I would suggest to Miss Katie Weaver, if we were ever to share a drink sometime and would come face to face and she was asking me for my input and career advice, I would suggest that she has quite the future in politics, because the particular phrasing of this interview and this feature and the description of Johnson's demeanor during this question and answer is so suggestive and is so provocative, and it elicits such intrigue while also probably being completely full of shit. The fact that she uses the word solemnly, she makes it very clear that he did not hesitate to answer her question. All of these very considered word choices suggest that Dwayne The Rock Johnson is way more serious about this presidential run than we ever would have given him credit for. And let's be honest about things, right? The Rock's not going to run for president. As much as we'd like him to, as much as it would make great podcast fodder, and as much as I would be forced to support the Democratic nominee in 2020 for pure entertainment value, there is no reason why he would give up his film career, you know, turning away millions and millions and millions of dollars to be in a half an hour of the Fast and Furious movies, you know, why he would give up such a fun and as it said in the article, lucrative lifestyle for sleepless nights, military responsibility, no cash, just nothing but the fate of the free world just resting on your shoulders, as broad and jacked and steroid ridden as they may be, right? There is no reason why he would ever need that in his life. And any sane human being, you know, would trade the office of the presidency for The Rock's life in a heartbeat. You know, there's no one that feels otherwise. But regardless, this article did its damnedest to add fuel to the fire. And as much as The Rock was probably just saying it because he wanted to be funny, he wanted to see what kind of commotion it would cause in the media. He wanted to stir the pot a little bit, boost the brand, you know, just again, these are all considered moves. The Rock is a great marketer, a great brander, a great businessman. He understands that when he says something like this, it's only going to work out well for him. But the fact that this feature writer wrote that answer in such a way in the comedy issue of GQ is a brilliant political maneuver, because people are going to actually take this seriously. And that is sort of, that is the gist of politics. People, you know, politicians are not serious with anything they say. They're not sincere. But they are such good performers that you don't doubt their sincerity when they talk to you. I mean, the more I'm thinking about it, although he has no policy experience, like, you know, certain other presidents that we've had. And although, you know, he probably wouldn't be very good at the job, and it's not a pursuit that is suited to his skill set. As a political figure, and as a guy that can kiss some babies, shake some hands, and turn out people for rallies, like, The Rock could be a great politician. And I actually think he could do pretty well in a primary if given the correct resources and you know, if a perfect storm similar to the one that Trump got sort of turned the tides in his favor. All is to say, this is definitely a joke, and I'm going to continue to laugh at the joke because I love The Rock and I have fawned over him several times on this podcast. But if this somehow gains enough steam and snowballs into something serious, and we're actually looking at candidate Dwayne The Rock Johnson, and this guy's getting on a debate stage, sign me up, guys. This is a real possibility. No, okay, let's talk about Comey. Let's talk about the James Comey situation. It's so damn boring. Do we really have to? Like, seriously. I just want to talk about The Rock. I just want to do my thing, man. But I'm too far deep. I'm pot committed at this point. I've done this Trump segment now for 2 years. And when our president does something silly and something outrageous and something as unexpected as firing the director of the FBI midway through an investigation into his ties to the Russian government, I have to talk about it. Listen, there's no commentary that I can give you that is unique to this podcast. You can get every color of the political rainbow from whatever blog or Facebook page or cable news channel you want to expose yourself to, you know? So I'm not going to give you anything new here. I'm just going to say this. I'm very confused. This is unexpected, not necessarily because I thought James Comey would serve a full term under President Trump. I didn't think the guy would last. Eventually, I guess I expected that Trump would want to put his own guy in there. But the timing of this and the optics of this are so inconvenient for the Trump administration. We have to look at this from sort of a meta level. We have to, you know, move away from sort of the surface level analysis that we've been getting on our cable news channels here. But you gotta think, when Trump is making this decision, and he has really smart people, capable people, people that understand the political game around him, when he's making a move like this, you have to think a step ahead and say, what's the media narrative going to be? And we're in the middle of a Russia investigation. Subpoenas are about to come down the pike. It's a very heated political time right now, and there's a lot of key legislation that we're trying to get through Congress. Healthcare is a major concern. The tax reform is still a lingering question. And regardless of what's going to come of the Russia investigation, it's not like firing one guy is going to solve all your problems. It's not like everything's going to go away like Henry Hill at the end of Goodfellas, right? These skeletons are going to come out of the closet whether you like it or not. So I'm just sort of thinking about this in terms of the optics. And I'm thinking, if Trump is really trying to cover up something with the Russia scandal, firing James Comey is not the way to cover up that scandal. It's not the way to assure the public that you haven't done anything wrong. The questions will get answered. And if this isn't about Russia, and this is really about the job that James Comey has done as head of the FBI, and this was actually on the recommendation of Jeff Sessions, and this was really something you were planning on doing anyway, the manner with which you did it just gave your opponents some leverage and just gave them a chance to point the finger at you and say you're trying to cover up your Russia connections. You just added more fuel to the fire by doing it in this way at this time. You know, if this isn't a cover-up, you're sure making it look like a cover-up. Which, you know, my response to that is, this can't be a cover-up because you can't be stupid enough to cover it up in this way. So it's this weird sort of, I don't know, there's a lot of contradictions going on and a lot of sort of layers upon layers of thinking. And it's possible that this is just stupidity and incompetence on the part of the Trump campaign or the Trump administration, which is not shocking. I mean, it's possible that, like, Comey found something, you know, and that the investigation was heading towards a place that they didn't want it to go. And Trump and Bannon and Kushner all just turned around and looked at themselves and said, Comey's got to go. He knows too much. He got too close. It's possible. But I don't know, man. It's just very weird to me. And I don't call this the smoking gun on the Russia investigation yet. You know, I'm not ready to call this a Nixonian move until there's some actual merit to these accusations. You know, we can't treat it as such. But I don't know. I mean, I guess here's the other thing that I want to say about this. In spite of the horrible year he had last year, and he really had it rough, James Comey, in the year 2016. I mean, you'd think you had it bad last year. A guy has not gone through such love and subsequent betrayal and hatred since Britney Spears and Kevin Federline were married for like 3 weeks. You know what I mean? Like, that guy was just, at one point, half the country loved him. The other half wanted to see him burn. And the roles just completely switched within days of one another. It was such an emotional roller coaster. And it's like, this guy just can't win no matter what he does. And I certainly had my complaints about James Comey. I was very skeptical of the Hillary email investigation and how the FBI decided to handle it. It just seemed like Hillary Clinton was given a lot of passes in the interest of keeping the election as peaceful and calm as possible. And I understand that James Comey didn't want the FBI influencing the election in any meaningful way. He wanted to remain out of it. And he wanted to just let the voters make up their own minds. And unfortunately for him, the circumstances of this investigation did not allow that to happen. There was a lot of political pressure from both sides. He was sort of just dealt a bad hand in this particular instance. And if I'm looking at James Comey as an apolitical public servant, although I have some qualms, and although not everything was handled 100% correct 100% of the time, I think he was pretty good at what he did. And it's too bad that this happened to him. But to everybody out there that is outraged about this, I'm going to read Trump's tweet from yesterday. One that I am sure if you're listening to this podcast, you have read by now. He said, in a way that only Trump knows how. This is a classic tweet. It's been a while since we got one of those. I don't know if you've noticed, but the Trump Twitter account has been a little cold these days, and I'm glad that we added a little heat to that fire. The Democrats have said some of the worst things about James Comey, including the fact that he should be fired, but now they play so sad. He said about Chuck Schumer, crying Chuck Schumer, that's a good one, stated recently, I do not have confidence in him, meaning James Comey, any longer, then acts so indignant. Hashtag drain the swamp. Let me tell you something, folks. Our president is 100% right about the hypocrisy of the Democratic Party. And this is certainly hypocrisy that we've seen on the other side. And there's no question. This is a recurring theme on this podcast. But understand this. You are not allowed to be upset about this firing. You are certainly not within any sort of decent political right to criticize this move if you were blaming James Comey for Hillary Clinton's loss back in November. If you were looking for this man's head on November 9th, you are not allowed to express phony outrage now. You can't turn around and be like, how dare you, Mr. President, fire this great public servant looking out for the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. How dare you, sir? James Comey is a patriot. I don't know why this angry liberal has jowls, but he does. How dare you, sir? Mr. President, tear down this wall. You're just not allowed to be mad about this. I'm sorry. You cannot expect... This is what drives me so crazy about people. Because I talk a lot of politics on this show, and I engage in political debates with a lot of people in my real life. But you cannot politicize things at your convenience. Right? You have to, if you're a real political junkie and you really want to engage in this complicated debate that we all have with each other, you have to understand that everything is politicized. In this tango of American politics, what goes around comes around. Wow, that's a lot of mixed metaphors all in one sentence. No, that's just the way of life. It is what it is. I totally get when I follow politics like the avid junkie that I am, I understand that it's something that I would much rather watch from a distance than ever engage in. It's a dirty, disgusting, gross game, but also a fascinating study in human nature. All right? So I love following it, but I totally get that if I politicize something, I'm not going to be surprised if the other side does the exact same thing. You know, if I get mad about James Comey's handling of the Hillary Clinton investigation, I'm going to expect the other side to get mad at his handling of the Russia investigation. It just is what it is. Once we open that door, and once we insert our own political beliefs into the discussion, and once we make it a partisan issue, it's not going to stop being a partisan issue. If you really believed that James Comey should be treated as an objective, you know, officer of the law, if you truly believed that he should have remained out of the election in 2016 and this, he should have never been a political tool for either side, if you really believed that, right, and you're a Democrat and you're on the left, when Comey reopened the investigation into the Hillary emails, what you should have said was, I'm not sure what this director found. I'm not sure why he felt the need to send that letter to Congress. I'm not privy to this information, but I will respect his decision because he has more on his desk, more information at his disposal than I can ever dream of having. And as an officer of the law, as the head of the top law enforcement agency in the land, it is his responsibility to do the job to the best of his ability. And however the chips may fall, let it be what it is. You know, you can't get mad when he reopens the investigation, right? And then now, because here's the thing, you open the door to Comey being a political tool. You open that door. When you were singing Comey's praises back in July after he dropped the email investigation, and then you turned on him in November when he reopened that investigation, you sent a very clear message to both the public and to Donald Trump that James Comey's political motivations matter. If he benefits our cause, he's a hero. If he benefits the other side, he's a villain. You opened this can of worms. What you said is he's no longer an objective moderator. This is beyond the letter of the law. Partisanship now matters. So you shouldn't be surprised when Trump turns around. He now has all the power. You just use the guy as a political tool. You can't be surprised when Trump decides to cut bait because Comey's politics don't serve him well. If you politicize something, the other side's going to do the exact same thing. Which is why, you know, I've said this before and I'll say it again. If you believe in small government, or at least a government that is honest and accountable, and a government that provides its citizens information and goes through a process of checks and balances, if you believe in all those sort of fundamentals of a free democracy, you have to leave politics out of it. And you have to resist the temptation to criticize something because it hurts your cause. Because then you're going to ultimately cry wolf at the end of the day. You have to stand for someone like James Comey 365 days out of the year. Regardless of what scandal he's involved in, you have to let the law be the law. And your first allegiance must be to democracy, to liberty, to freedom, to the American people, to the nation as we know it. It must not be an allegiance to the Democratic or Republican Party. That's how everything spirals out of control. That's how everything comes to be politicized. And that's how we lose this free system as we know it. Anyway, those are my thoughts on this James Comey situation and the world of politics. Crazy times, everybody. Crazy, crazy times. Here's some music. When we come back, we're going to get a little lighter as we discuss one of my favorite television programs of all time. The Return of American Idol is on the docket for after this musical break. I realize I should have done a video about this, but I just don't have time this week. I'm just really super busy. This is going to have to work on audio here. But speaking of which, if you want to check out any sort of pop culture commentary that I choose to share with the world, please go to NicoEmpire.com/cultured. That is the home of my new YouTube series, Cultured. I shouldn't say new. It's been going on since February now. You've heard me talk about it. This past week, I talked about Ryan Seacrest's new gig with Kelly Ripa in the morning. That was some sizzling hot commentary for you there. So check out those takes. There's not going to be a video for a couple weeks, and I'll explain all of that at the end of the show. But if you want to check out the archives, they're all there, nicoempire.com/cultured. And for you right here, right now, I have a related topic. Speaking of Ryan Seacrest, moving to ABC, getting a new morning talk show. Another television favorite, specifically one that was hosted by Ryan Seacrest, is making that same move. American Idol is coming back, you guys. 2018 will see the return of the groundbreaking musical reality series. It was canceled in 2015 due to, or was it 2015? Yeah, 2015. Or maybe last year. Now I don't remember. It hasn't been that long. Regardless, American Idol went off the air due to low ratings and just insanely high contracts for its stars. It was a show that at one point was the most popular show in the world. It used to do like Sunday Night Football numbers. Actually, that's not giving it enough credit. It used to do better than Sunday Night Football. It was a phenomenon. It was something that people talked about at the water cooler. Everybody knew who won American Idol in a particular year around like seasons 4, 5, and 6. Like, it was the only sort of pop culture staple that everybody was on the same page on. And it was a particularly transformative show for a young Nico DiGregorio. Now, I have talked about this obsession with American Idol at length. I've written blog posts about it. Actually, I've only written one blog post about it. And I think you can find that's from like 2014 if you click on the little blog link on nicoempire.com. But I've explained my irrational love for the show. And when people meet me in real life and are not familiar with my podcast resume, they are baffled when I explained to them my love of reality television. They were the first shows that captured my attention at a young age. Survivor, The Amazing Race, Big Brother, and particularly American Idol consumed my life for a good 5-year stretch and really defined my adolescent youth. And I've often thought about why I loved American Idol so much. It is, after all, a silly reality contest aimed towards teenage girls and middle-aged housewives. That's the target demo. That's who's voting every week. That's the audience that's keeping the show afloat. And ultimately, it was just an excuse for these people to judge, you know, random 16-year-olds singing old Bon Jovi songs, you know, giving them a superiority complex, making them feel like they have some sort of power in American democracy. In many ways, American Idol represents our worst impulses. And these are certainly fair criticisms. And I am all ears if you want to complain about the show's sort of downsides. But for me, at around age 10 or 11, American Idol really made old music cool. You know, at a time when Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake and NSYNC weren't really speaking to me as a young music listener, I took real comfort in seeing old Stevie Wonder songs and old Billy Joel songs and old Beatles songs performed on American Idol. These were musicians that I was not previously familiar with, but it made it sexy. It made those old artists relevant and fresh, and it gave me an excuse to listen to them and enjoy them. And ultimately, what American Idol did was carve out my music listening habits for the rest of my life. Some of my favorite musicians ever were exposed to me on an episode of American Idol. So that was always really cool for me. And I also just really loved Simon Cowell. I thought he was the coolest guy. His honesty defined a lot of my personality growing up. And I try to be half as honest on a day-to-day basis as Simon was with contestants on American Idol. So all is to say, it was a really important show for me. And now it's coming back 2 years off the air. And my gut reaction to all of this is probably the same as the majority of the internet. The consensus has sort of been, this is too soon. Let the thing die. American Idol has nothing more to give. It was a fresh idea in the early 2000s. It had its place in the pop culture landscape. And there was a time where a show like that was meaningful. But that time is long gone. Reality competition shows are a shell of what they used to be. There's only a few of them left. And there is nothing that American Idol can do to recapture some of that magic that it had earlier on in its run. I agree with all of this. And I don't necessarily believe that American Idol should return to the airwaves. And if you're upset about it, you're well within your right to be. But I will say this. I realize something about pop culture here. We have entered a new phase in television, a new era in entertainment. And you see this in film, you see this on television, you see this on the internet. We are living in a world where nothing ever dies. It's the zombie apocalypse, everybody. Forget life, forget death. It's all an illusion now. If you are a pre-existing piece of intellectual property, chances are you're going to be resurrected any day now. Because there's no longer a beginning or end to any TV show, to any movie, to any franchise. Everything is going to come back eventually. Everything just exists forever and ever and ever in perpetuity. With Netflix, with Hulu, with Amazon, with Hollywood's obsession with reboot culture, everything just always is. And the idea of a show going off the air and just remembering that 10-year stretch where it was one of the most popular shows in the country, that time is over. If you liked something before, it's gonna come back. And it's most likely going to be pretty horrible. I mean, we're living in a world now. Guys, are you aware that Prison Break is currently airing on Fox every week? Are you aware of that? For those that either streamed the show on Netflix or watched it live in the mid-2000s, like, are you aware that that show is on right now? That show was canceled after 4 seasons. The ratings weren't that good. It sort of gained a little bit of a cult following on Netflix. And now it's on TV. There is a Prison Break reboot. Will and Grace. That sitcom that your grandmother liked from the early 2000s. That's coming back in the fall. There's going to be new Will and Grace episodes. Gilmore Girls just did a reboot. Like, Bob Saget and Dave Coulier and John Stamos are still doing Full House. Like, your best friend from when Full House was on is probably dead by now. You know what I mean? Like, that's how much time has passed. Nothing will ever die anymore. You know, all the old classic Disney movies you used to love, they're getting rebooted with live action versions. Beauty and the Beast came out this year. Lion King's coming out next year. Cinderella was done. Snow White. Nothing will ever die. And this all kind of bums me out because, I don't know, I'm one that's a little sentimental when it comes to my television viewing habits. I want to look back on these shows with fond memories as time capsules of a better time in my life. I want to be able to revisit 2004 American Idol through the lens of 2004 Nico. And, you know, not have it popping up again when I'm 22. You know what I mean? I just sort of want to let that thing be its own thing. But that's simply not the world we're living in anymore. And there really isn't any consistency with any of this. You know, there are reboots that people like. There are reboots that people hate. There was a Hannibal TV show a couple years ago that nobody watched. And when it was announced, people thought, come on, let that franchise die. Let Anthony Hopkins retire to Guatemala or something. You know, let Hannibal be Hannibal and just stop it already. And that ended up being like a smashing critical success. There's a bunch of Planet of the Apes movies that are coming out every year. Like, Charlton Heston has been dead for like 30 years. And, you know, we're giving the new Andy Serkis Planet of the Apes movies like 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. There's no consistency to any of this. People like reboots, people hate reboots. You know, it's just sort of fickle that way. If it's good, people will say, yeah, this is a fresh new take on this old source material. And if it sucks, people are going to say, you should let the thing die. And a similar thing is going to happen with American Idol. There will be some people that like it, more people that will probably hate it. It's going to be criticized, it's going to be picked apart, whether Ryan Seacrest ends up posting it or not. But, like, I don't know. This is just the world that we're living in. And ultimately, I'm kind of surprised how I've reacted to all of this. I'm surprised how indifferent I was to this news. Maybe I'm maturing in my pop culture hot takes. But I'm just sort of at peace with reboot culture now. I'm at peace that every summer blockbuster is going to be like a Baywatch remake or something. I'm fine now with 10 Fast and Furious movies. I'm going to keep seeing them no matter what. Like, there's no hard and fast rule anymore. You don't have to let things die. Just let them live. And if they suck, don't watch them. We are living in a world of endless possibilities now in entertainment, where there are more shows than you will ever have time to even think about. So just let them be and let that audience enjoy it. And then just, I don't know, move on to your next Netflix documentary that you're really into. You know, do a little binge of Catastrophe on Amazon Prime. Just do your thing. Carve out your own corner. I don't know. I'm okay with the American Idol remake. I'm fine with it. Mostly because I have no interest in watching it. And it will probably never go in front of my eyes at any point in my life. There you go. All right, look at that. Here we go. That's a podcast. Do I want to do one more rant? No, I'm going to save it. Oh my God. Yeah, maybe I'm going to, I don't know. Maybe I'll do this on 2 cents. Hopefully I'll do a 2 cents by the end of the week. I'm going to save this upcoming rant. I'll give you a tease. There's this new hot trend in the children's toy industry that is so confusing to me. And you may know what I'm talking about. But that... Look for that on 2 cents coming up in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to ask Rob if he knows anything about this. Because it's weird. I mean, I know I was lame as a kid, but I don't think I was this lame. All right, maybe I was. As I was... creating fake game shows in my basement and producing them with my camcorder. You know? As I was collecting, like, Blue's Clues memorabilia as though it was a multi-million dollar stamp collection. I was definitely very lame. I take all that back. But anyway, there's this trend that's been confusing me. That'll be coming in the next week or so. Okay, guys. Here we go. We're at the end. Here's some music. Let's get the hell out of here. That's gonna do it for the Nico Show. Thank you for making me a part of your day. I will be back in the near distant future. Here's the deal, guys. I'm gonna have to go into radio silence for about 2 weeks. I have a lot of traveling to do. I'm gonna be going on a lot of trips, and it's going to be a lot of fun, but there are work-related responsibilities, and there are personal responsibilities. I have a vacation planned to South Carolina in a couple weeks, and I'll be on the beach getting a tan, sipping on a freshly chilled Coca-Cola, and enjoying the sun of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So there's a bunch of reasons why I won't be able to come on here and do a podcast for the foreseeable future. I apologize for leaving you hanging, but this, I think Why Is This a Thing will continue to run uninterrupted. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I think there'll be a new Why Is This a Thing every week. But I think I'll be gone till at least June 1st. So for the next 2 weeks or so, I will be off the air. I hopefully will return with many a stories that I will share with you, and we'll have a great time. So no Nico Show, no 2 cents, probably a Why Is This a Thing or two. Certainly no Think Tank, no episode of Cultured. But I will say this. Once June 1st comes, there's a lot of cool stuff planned. I've been working with Nick, Zach, and Adam from Why Is This a Thing. We have some exciting stuff going on for the month of June. The podcast world will never be the same as we launch a brand new endeavor starting June 1st. I can't wait to come back and get back into the swing of things then. It's really exciting, and hopefully it will accomplish the goal of bringing more listeners to this little powwow that we have every week, and just allowing me to be more creatively fulfilled, because that's ultimately the goal of all of this. So I will see you in a couple of weeks. Thank you so much for listening. Tweet me at FunnyNicoTweets. Email me Nico@2centsradio.com. Subscribe to all the other shows that I have. And I will return, hopefully, with a nice brown tan and a well-rested spirit for more of the Nico Show come June 1st. I love each and every one of you. And until next time, please tune into this here show where you, yes, you will finally hear the story of Lord Steve. Take care, y'all.